You're listening to Bigfoot Live, starring Thomas Gardy, the world's most respected authority on the phenomena known as Bigfoot. Sit back and relax as we take you on a journey into the world of the unknown. Believer or skeptic, man or woman, you will be mesmerized by real people telling real descriptions about real encounters. Fasten your seatbelts, America. It's reality radio at its finest, and it starts now.
In 1967, my whole life changed. I saw the Roger Patterson film on the Johnny Carson show. And I gotta tell you, that's the day I thought I was gonna challenge the world and go out and find this thing.
Found like 12 tracks on the ground. I didn't want to believe it was Bigfoot.
There he is.
He's moving right now. He's moving right now. He's straight out of the tree line. He's moving to the right. See him? He's going to the right. He's going into the trees right now. Come here, look.
I'm Bob Hallmark, and I'm a reporter with ABC Television in Tyler, Longview. It's been my pleasure to be with Tom Scotty and his team tonight, and I have to admit that I was skeptical. When I came out here, I thought we, at this time in our history, had the technology to be able to find one of these things, if it existed. But after seeing the footprints and the dig marks in the sand, and what I believe to be a very large creature running at a high rate of speed through the woods, I'm convinced I'm going to have to change my opinion on Bigfoot.
I turned, I saw this thing standing by my gator.
When I saw the actual footprints, I realized they were something special and probably Sasquatch.
When I landed on the ground, I was kind of thinking, this ain't no human being. It's got to be something else.
www.searchingforbigfoot.com.
Animus wants what you think I've seen. Something strange, you know. Sasquatch sitting on the side of the street, and he was talking to Moxley Joe. Where the party they gonna have? Out in the St. John's Wall. Sasquatch doing a brand new dance, and he called it the Bigfoot Stomp.
Well, good evening, ladies and gentlemen. This is Marco Bill on the Bigfoot Live broadcast. And folks, it's that time of the week again. It's time for the Wednesday evening Bigfoot Live radio show with our host, Mr. Tom Descardi. And now, everybody, the man who put the big back into Bigfoot, our host and renowned Bigfoot researcher, Mr. Tom Biscardi. Good evening, Tom. How are you tonight?
Hello, it's us again from the Virginia sighting.
And we just ran into Bigfoot again. He, Tom,
well, when he came back, we could see him stomping through the woods first. Well, we could hear him. Then I heard these big whacks. It sounded like he was hitting a tree or something.
He looked very, very pissed off, like he was just pissed at the world.
So then I took my flashlight to look for him, and that's when I found, when I was looking around, and his red eyes were glowing, really, really red, and I was just...
You'd think he was just fake from the movies, but it's not. He was pissed. He was whacking that tree trunk against that tree.
Yeah, it was really scary.
If you could just, please, bear this in mind, write it down in your research. I think it was a defining moment in our life. Yes, and call back. We would really like to speak to a representative. Thank you.
Well, hello, everybody. This is Marco Bill. Happy birthday, Tom. Tom isn't here tonight. And a couple days ago, Tom got the flu, and he got an inner ear infection. In the last couple days, he's not been able to walk around at all. He's got vertigo, and every time he gets up and tries to move around, he gets sick to his stomach. And so I just told him to take a rest tonight, and I take the show for him. But we all wish him happy birthday. Today is Tom's birthday. And what a way to celebrate your birthday. Getting dizzy without drinking, that's pretty bad. Anyway, I want to welcome everybody to the show tonight. And we do have a wonderful show. My gosh, so many things going on. That little phone call thing was, as I played it a couple of times already. This happened a couple of months ago. And my four kids were out camping. And they ran into the creature. And you heard what they said. And they were scared. And they called me in the middle of the night. It was about 3 o'clock in the morning when they called me. In fact, they called me about 4 or 5 times all that night. And but it's kind of a little intro into a lot of the things that are going to go on tonight. We have some very, some real neat experiences and things that have taken place. Anyway, I wanted to thank everybody out there, all of our listeners and our Bigfoot family out there for sending us emails and letting us know what's going on. Everybody knows that the symposium over in Texas has been going strong. There's all kinds of stuff going on, reports and all kinds of things going on there. Of course, talking about all the DNA and all the other things that they got. And, of course, some of it's ours and some other people's that that are still missing their DNA from a few years ago, a couple years ago. But everybody's having fun out there trying to make something out of it. Here we are tonight, and I guess the best way to go about things is go back a few years here and talk to one of our good friends, Roger Peterson. Roger, how are you tonight? I gotta find your little button, buddy. Here you are. How are you tonight, Rog?
Hey, how you doing, Marco?
I'm doing great.
I'm glad to hear that, and you know, I'm sorry to hear that Tom's sick on his birthday. If he's listening, you know, I wish him a really happy birthday, and I just wish he wouldn't have to be doing it that way.
I know, what a hell of a thing to happen, have a hangover without drinking.
Oh, you got that right, my friend. I heard a couple of my friends out there, Chuck Creole and the Gentle Giant. And
yep.
Sounds like you got a heck of a bunch of guys lined up tonight.
Well, as always what we do, Roger, at the end of the show, what we've been doing here recently, at the end of the show, we have a get-together with everybody. We open
yeah.
it up for everybody to talk and ask questions.
Oh, yeah. I've done that.
And we're going to do the same
again
tonight.
Bill. Cool.
Well, let me just give you a list of who we got on the line tonight here. We got Steve, the Gentle Giant. We got Swede. We got Rocky. We got Chuck Creel. We got you, Roger.
Yeah.
We got Anthony from Virginia, Dave Ortiz from Four Corners, New Mexico, and Bruce, the Snake Man.
Oh, and
so
Bruce, too, huh?
Yep.
Well, I'll be double-dogged.
There we are. That's
tell you what, you know, it's always a privilege to be on the show, Marco. Always
yeah,
a privilege.
Well, it's always a privilege to have you on here. Now, everybody doesn't, may, you know, some of the newer people may not know this, but Roger goes way back, quite a ways, about 6 years, 7 years now. And he was in the original Bigfoot movie, but basically he reported he came to us, and I guess how many years was it, Roger, in between what had
oh,
happened?
Oh my!
You finally
well,
about
from the time that I saw Tom and had him out investigating my encounter, that was 2001, And my encounter had happened in 1987, the 15th of May.
Yep.
So it's been
years.
Quite a while.
Yeah.
And I've been with you guys for a long time.
Well, yeah, you've been on expedition too. Well, why don't you catch us up with what's been going on? The last time you were on was about 6 months ago. Let us know,
sir.
What's been happening.
Well, when we were out 6 months ago, June, we went out on some calls, and I tell you the way that I travel, man. I mean, when I'm called out to go, I mean, I just had a heart attack, Marco, and I was there anyway, you know. But we had some investigations we had to do, and we checked out a couple of sightings, and then we went all the way pretty much around the loop and wound up in Atlanta, Georgia. And we went back through where's that place? From the movie, Falk, Arkansas.
Yeah.
We were gonna stop there, but unfortunately, my wife and Tom's wife, Joan, both came down sick at the same time, really bad, and we had to cut our trip short, you know.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah, but I'll tell you what, you know, I was traveling with a good bunch of guys, you know. We had Chico and the Gentle Giant, and Pop was there, and Bruce was there with us on that one.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and it was kind of a hectic jump to trip, you know what I'm saying?
Sure.
But it was awesome, and I mean, there's people out there that are speculating of what we did and where we were, and, you know, really, I can't say, you know, because it's something that I made a vow that I would not talk about, and it's just going to have to wait until it comes out, you know.
Yeah, well, I understand. That's okay.
But I'll tell you, recently I've had some encounters right out here close to me. I've had some people call me from Sierra Vista and repeated sightings of a creature over 8 foot tall out on the Audubon Reserve. And then we've had one that a guy that lives right here in the Saddle Gap Trailer Park with us, he came to me and he says, Roger, he says, you're not going to believe what I got to tell you. And he told me about an encounter he had just 2 weeks ago out behind what we call D Hill for Douglas, Arizona, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm going out to investigate on that one tomorrow morning, and we're going to get together, and he's going to take me out exactly where he was, and we're going to see what we can find.
Well, now, you know, there's a lot of people out there, Roger.
Yes, sir.
That have... Well, you know, you have kind of a unique story happen. Basically, one of the few people that these creatures had charged. You had a creature that charged you.
Yes, sir.
And you had a few moments there that were life-threatening for you and the people that were with you.
Oh, man.
What I'd like to try to do tonight.
It's something that I will never forget.
Well, I thought maybe what would be appropriate would be, you know, relive that experience one time for us again, if you wouldn't mind. I don't want to drag you through the thing, but I mean, basically, there's a lot of people out there that right there are listening. Excuse me, I got a frog in my throat and it's starting to croak.
Yeah, me too. I think it's going around.
The things that happened are not usual things that take place when people have sightings with these creatures, but
exactly.
What it shows is it can happen.
And oh, yes.
The other thing that happened was a lot of the garbage that took place after you had your sighting and your incident and
yes.
What it caused you to do and all that. Could you briefly take us through that little...
Sure. Once I was out every weekend we would take and a bunch of my friends, we would get together and we'd go out to Paint Rock Lake. It was the thing to do, you know. It was only like 30 miles away, so we could get off work and still have time to set up or wherever we were going to be for the night, you know, and then have a good night of fishing. Well, we had went up and got right up against the dam itself and the tunnel that comes out. And I had seen some friends of mine pulling some really big catfish out of there, and that's what I wanted, you know. So me and my friend Jim Jordan, his two boys, Charlie and Jimmy, and my friend Daryl Lee, we were all out there, and I was the only one that was armed. And we were just sitting back. I found a little niche in the rock cliff that was there, and we had a big full moon. And I don't know, I guess it was about 2:30 in the morning around that time, and all of a sudden, everything just went dark. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And I looked up over my head, and they're just frozen, man. Like it was trying to act like a tree or something was this female Bigfoot, you know? And I'm like, oh, great. That's just what I need, you know? And sure enough, it was, you know? And I jumped to my feet, and I grabbed my little rifle, and I said, guys, get up, man. We got a Bigfoot. And they're like, oh, yeah, sure, right, Roger. Ha, 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 you know. And no sooner than I said that, she disappeared behind us in the bush, and a big 9.5-foot tall male come right out in the middle of the little lake that we were fishing in. And, I mean, the water on him came only barely to his midsection, and on me it was up to my throat, you know. So that's how I know how big he was, because I stand 6 foot, and I mean, he had shoulders that were about at least 4 foot across, and I mean, he just was sitting there staring at me and glaring at me like, you know, I was froze. I just got on the point in front of everybody, and he stopped right dead where the light came to. And evidently, the bright light from the lantern was the only thing keeping him back. And the lantern started to die, so we got like a bucket brigade, you know, to get the guys. One guy get the funnel, the other guy get the lamp, and the other one get the gas. And we had the flames going about 8 foot high. And as soon as the darn lantern went out to be refilled, he charged me. And I just started dumping shells over his head with my little shotgun, and he didn't stop. So finally, at point-blank range, I just dropped my rifle down and shot right dead in his chest. When I shot, the lights, they got it back going, and he was standing there huddling with his right arm across his chest, and he was just looking at me. Then he turned full body towards the cliff area, turned back to me all the way completely around, and then he shot across that 35-yard little pool like it was nothing. And he crashed through the trees and made a god-awful scream that I'll never forget. And later, we come out the next morning, and we had two Special Forces guys coming out there with full M16 sidearms and dart guns, the whole nine yards. And one of them said, well, at least one of them was armed, you know. And then it got around town about what happened, and we were telling people what happened, and I was ridiculed so bad I had to move, you know. I mean, they were like,
"What happened when you reported this to the game service?"
The game warden, he came to me. I didn't report it to him. He came to me, and I was just leaving out of my house at the trailer park, and he stopped me, and he's like, "Hey, Roger," he says, "we got a problem." And I said, "Well, what's up, pal?" He says, well, he says, I'm going to have to arrest you for shooting an endangered species. And I said, really? I said, well, okay. I said, but I know my rights. I said, first, you're going to take me and my wife to go see this creature that you said I shot. I said, then she's going to go to the news with it. And then he tells me, he says, oh, well, you just stay where you can be found. And I mean, Marco, this guy was my next door neighbor, you know? So where was I going to go? You know what I mean?
I know, yeah.
And later on, you know, I had just had enough and moved away, and we had found later that that male and female had had babies in the tunnel, Mark. And I didn't know it, Marco. And evidently all he was trying to do was protect his family, and I didn't know.
Well, and you don't know that when it happens, but that's exactly.
Yeah.
So what I wanted people to hear was, first of all, that these creatures do protect their families.
Oh, yes, they do.
And then the second thing, and they don't just normally attack people.
No,
I mean,
sir,
not
they
normally,
do not.
They're normally very evasive. And,
oh, yes. I've been around them several times since, and they have never done anything aggressive whatsoever, you know. And with my experience, it's what drew me to keep going on and to find out more about these creatures. And you are absolutely right. They do not make aggressive moves unless they feel threatened.
For some reason, right? And we may not know what that reason is.
Exactly.
The other thing I wanted people to understand is that the ridicule that you received was enough that you and your wife moved completely out of the area to another place.
Yes, sir. And the funny thing is,
other things, yeah.
You know what's the funny thing, though?
Yeah.
Now I go back to that town, and everybody's like, wow, there he is. There's the guy with the hat, you know, and now I'm like a hero, you know what I mean? But it took me a very long time to come out and talk about it, you know, because of the ridicule.
Sure.
And I found that since I came out and told people what happened to me, that it's also given other people the courage to come out, and I am so privileged that it them hearing about my encounter, that it urges them to talk about it too.
That's right, and we appreciate that as well. Well, I just want to thank you so much, RP, for coming on. Now, you're going to wait till the end of the show, right? We got a lot of stuff to go through, and there's a lot of stuff going on right now, and you'll be able to ask some questions. Maybe somebody wants to ask some questions to you as well.
Hey, great. Not a problem. I'll be here.
Well, thank you, Roger, for coming on tonight and sharing with us again.
Well, God bless you, Marco. And again, happy birthday to Tom, and God bless you and your wife, Tom.
Okay, buddy. I'm going to mute you out, but just hang on to the end of the show, okay?
Yeah.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, that was Roger Peterson. We're going to go to a quick little, I've got to find it here. For some reason, I'm having problems finding my stupid commercial.
In August 2008, there was an announcement that was heard around the globe. A promise of the end to an age-long mystery and deception that played out on the world stage. Anatomy of a Bigfoot hoax. Now, for the first time ever, see with your own eyes and hear the true behind-the-scenes story of the hoax that gripped the world. Featuring original, never-before-seen footage. Available now at searchingforbigfoot.com.
One, they're very sick people, but you know what bothers me more than anything, Megan? These guys were the law.
And we're back. And the commercial speaks for itself. You want to know what happened back in 2008? The just, you know, buy the movie, The Hoax, and buy the movie, and it's pretty well documented. We did a pretty good job, I think, on doing that. Hey, our next guest is Dave Ortiz from Four Corners, New Mexico. Dave is going to talk about a lot of things there the last few weeks. He couldn't come on because he had to do some other things. Dave, how are you?
Hey, doing good, Marco Bill.
Well, it's nice to hear from you tonight.
Yeah, I hope you're feeling a little better, too.
Well, I still got my jaws to a football, but what can you do? They won't pull my tooth because it's infected, so I got to wait till the infection goes away before they can do anything.
Oh, yeah. It's always something, huh?
Yeah, but tell us what's been going on with you.
Yeah, well, I attended the conference the other week. There was a Bigfoot conference over here in Upper Fruitland, New Mexico. Brenda Harris was officiating it, and we had several guests. We had William Barnes, Scott Nelson, who is a linguist, who tries to interpret attempts to see if there's a language within the Bigfoot realm, which seems to be one, actually.
Mm-hmm.
Let's see, we also had Hoyt Velarde, who lives in the Dulce area, that's had many Bigfoot experiences on his property and within the Dulce area. I don't know the total history of Hoyt. I thought he was like a game officer or somebody in law enforcement within the Navajo tribe, I mean the Jicarilla Apache tribe, that is. And we heard some fantastic stories what's going on out, you know, just out and about the area.
Now, is this the White Mountain area?
This is mostly the San Juan Mountain Range.
And that San Juan, okay.
Yeah, that includes the Apache Jicarilla Reservation, too, which is the southern part of the Southern Rockies there. And, we heard some interesting things about, you know, the Bigfoot. I actually picked up Scott over in Durango, Colorado, over at the airport, and then I took him and a gal named Sally Ramey, who's an investigator as well. She was a guest, too, and I took him to that area in the southwest part of the San Juan Mountains where I had found a bunch of tree formations. While we were out there, being Scott, being the linguistic expert, we started hearing some calls out there. They sounded bird-like, but they were sort of faked. You know, they had like a big, robust sound, but we were both saying, hey, I've never heard a bird like that before, even up here in the mountains. It sort of sounded like something like an ocean, like a large bird that you'd hear in the ocean, and it would make three calls. And then Scott theorized, he says, well, there's three of us right here, and this thing keeps making calls of three, and it did it probably about five or six times. We believe that it was letting others know that there were three of us. And we were right in that area, the tree formation area, manipulation area, I should really say, where the trees are in, you know, just manipulated, not just merely branches or logs, but actual full 50-foot trees, you know, put in symmetrical patterns. And he was, you know, he took a great interest in that. And then we went back to, you know, I took him back to the hotel in Farmington, and then we had the conference the next day. I was going to say, yesterday, I had to go to Durango to go pick up a guitar amp. I play, you know, in a music band. But before I could go there, I decided to spend some time over there back at the tree manipulation area. And this time I took my digital recorder, which I did record for about 45 minutes. And this was just my way of just burning time until I could get back into town. I did pick up some peculiar recordings. What I'm trying to do is put them into... I'm not real good with audio editing. So I still have this, still working on it, and I need to boost up the volume so we can hear better. But something unusual happened when I was leaving the area. It was probably like about 8:30. Yeah, it was about 8 o'clock because I had to get back into Durango about 8:30. And I was getting into lower altitudes. I was still about 8,600 foot altitude. The trees were clearing out. You know, there was just more like just smaller stands of aspen and pine and more meadowland. I was traveling. It was pure pitch black already, and something crossed the road. And this was Monday night. I saw something standing, probably, I'd say, close to 100 yards in front of me, and I was doing about 35 miles an hour. And it's a dirt road, a gravel road, and something was standing. I saw it. It was black, the blackest black I could ever see. I mean, I've seen black bear around the area before, but and usually they have a very shiny coat, but whatever this was absorbing the light of my headlights,
wow.
Basically. It was standing, and it didn't look extremely tall. It was not a tall figure, but the moment I started getting a little bit closer, it got on all fours and ran, and I thought, that sure looks like the weirdest bear I've ever seen, standing on two legs and then jumping, you know, and then just coming down. And not only did it run fast, but it only took about two leaps to get off that road, which, you know, even if a small bear would take several small leaps, you know. And it was extremely fast, and just the leaps were incredible. And then I stopped right where I thought that I saw it. And I almost went outside, and I thought, I don't know, I'm by myself, and I do have a pistol, but I just don't know if I should be outside, you know? So I took off. I was trying to look for any kind of imprints, but the ground is dry now. So I said, you know, this is fruitless. I probably should just get going. But it left me very, I don't know, just almost frustrated and confused. You know, I said, what exactly did I see? Did I see a Bigfoot, or was it a bear, or both, or what was that?
Yeah.
You know, I've seen bear before several times, and I've never seen one stand on its hind legs on the side of a road. Usually they're just, you know, on their 4 feet, or, you know, it was leaning on nothing. It was just purely just standing. Like, I caught it standing there, and it just decided to take off, so I'm lightly thinking that I saw a Bigfoot. It was very unusual.
Wow, that's something else.
Yeah. But I just remembered mostly what caught my eye, besides standing, was just the intensity of black. You know, it was very dark out there, but this thing almost seemed darker than the...
Yeah, darker than the dark.
Yeah, exactly. And it ran down an embankment, and I looked down it real quick, you know, just through the passenger side window. I rolled it down, and there was absolutely nothing to be seen down there. So I said, wow.
Oh, man.
I think I've had my first Bigfoot sighting.
Wow.
And this area,
well, you know, William Barnes was at that conference, right?
Yes.
And just to remind everybody, he is with, he has a balloon project, the Falcon Project.
Yes.
And what that is it's between a dirigible and a balloon. And it's got some state-of-the-art motorization, propellant, low audio type gas engine. Its cameras are very state of the art, using the militarized equipment. So at 3,000 feet, it can take a picture of a license plate and you can read it. So it's got everything: night vision, infrared, the whole nine yards. So it's really a pretty neat setup. And it's all controlled remotely. And he has, through the couple of years here, gotten permission from the you know, to be able to bring that thing into different areas, and got it cleared, you know, to be able to do that through the government. So what they're in the process of doing right now is building it and getting it in place, and then shortly they'll be out there trying to use it to see if they can't capture some of the creatures. And they have different areas that they've already identified and stuff. So and they've got a grant through a college through so it's a pretty well funded and a pretty well they have a scientific community, a board, and everything else that they've got all set up for. Pretty good deal.
Yeah, we were hoping that he would bring some kind of, you know, demonstration, but he said he just didn't have anything ready at this time. So it's like, oh.
Yeah, well, he's got the equipment. They've got the money to get the equipment and everything. They've got the equipment identified. But the problem is they're really in a rush right now trying to get that thing, that first project, put together.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and you know, he described it, you know, what it was going to do, and it's definitely taken some interest from other other groups, you know, and other organizations, closely hearing the progress of what this Falcon project will be doing.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah. Oh, go ahead, Marco Bill. Sorry.
No, yeah, I'm just saying you had a pretty good time there. Then how many people were at the conference?
Approximately. Five.
I'm talking about for audience.
Oh, I'm sorry.
A few hundred, right?
Yeah, we had 200, I think 220 the first day, and we had 120 the second day, which was Sunday.
Wow.
Yeah, so, you know, for a first time, and, you know, it was great. We did have some technical difficulties with the PA and everything, and luckily I had my drummer friend, who's also a sound man. He fixed that right away, and we got other technicalities fixed. You know, there were some things that were, you know, worrisome early in the morning, but it all smoothed it out, and it was really good. And Brenda was also a speaker too, so and she gave a great account of, you know, things that are happening. I did do some squatching on Saturday night. We had a little barbecue. In fact, that same friend of mine, his name is Fred Asufro, he's the drummer in my band. His sister, actually just west of Farmington, has been having a lot of activity over in the property. So we did a little camp out, and we did hear some whistles. Originally the Navajo people would call them skinwalker whistles, but they're more interpreted in our realm to be Bigfoot whistles. They're a melancholy whistle that sound almost like gang whistles, you know, that type stuff, you know?
Yeah.
And that's what it kind of sounded like, but more melancholy. You know, it's the notes are just not all even and everything. And I tried to get it on my digital recorder. Every time I would snap it on, you know, it was already too late. And I should have kept it running. The thing was, it was so cold outside. It was in the 30s when we were doing this, that my batteries would die down pretty fast. So they do. But yeah, there wasn't a lot of activity that night, but we were. Brenda was there too, Brenda Harris, and we were just relating stories, and I heard things that I never knew before, you know, and very very interesting little group that we had telling us, and everybody, let's see, I think I was the only non-Native American there, and no, there was a lady there named Paula. She was just there as a friend, with a friend, but everybody that was Native American had a story to tell. It was really interesting.
Wow, that's pretty good.
Yeah. Good food.
Well, thank you for coming on and tell us about everything and letting us know what's been going on in your area. You're going to stay on to the end of the show, right?
I'll probably have to leave, Marco Bill. I've got something else going on here shortly, but I'll try.
Okay.
I'll hang on as long as I can.
Okay. Well, what I'll do is I'll get in touch with you.
Okay. And I hope Tom's listening, and I'm wishing him a happy birthday as well.
Well, thank you, Dave.
You
take care, and thank you so much for coming on the show.
You too. Thank you.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, that was Dave Ortiz from Four Corners, New Mexico. Next, we're going to go out here to Anthony from Virginia. Anthony, how are you?
All right, Marco Bill. I want to say happy birthday to Tom.
Well, thank you. And how you been doing?
I've been tired. I've been doing, you know, working and
so many things going on.
yeah, you know, we had a death in the family, and so, you know, it's pretty eventful week with other issues as well, but trying to get back to normal right now.
Yeah, I understand. Well, you know, our sympathy goes out to your family.
Thank you.
I hope everything work out okay?
It will.
Okay. Well, it never does, but that's something hard to tell, you know, to take care of.
Yeah,
well, tell us what's been going on.
Well, you know, prior to the family issue, a little over 2 weeks ago, was going to visit a neighbor. And, when I went to, down the road, it was already dark, and I was hearing some howling noises, and, you know, and I And I just thought it was kind of early, but I just had to stop and listen. And then I, you know, come to the realization that, you know what, that is what I think it is. And went back and got my recorder, turned my recorder on.
Make me an appear stick.
Was able to, you know, catch the end of the howls that were taking place. And there was, I mean, it was kind of interesting because, you know, although there were some dogs in the distance that were barking, the ones that were closest were not barking, which is pretty much, right where the tree line started, you know, where the wooded area starts. So, I just thought that was interesting. And just
it amazes me. You know, Anthony, it amazes me. You know, we're going to have another account tonight. But how the dogs react when these creatures are around, and they don't react. I mean, they react completely different than what people are used to. And it's really amazing that they seem to evade and stay away from the creatures.
Well, I think even the one, there's quite a few dogs, you know, just that my neighbor has, and then the surrounding neighbors, they have dogs as well. We don't have any because we're allergic, but sometimes I'm picking up that I can tell when there's more than one in the area, and this is just, you know, my suspicions, because the one where there were dogs barking in the distance, I was thinking there was probably, you know, maybe one around, or maybe they were more than one, but they weren't all, they were probably all in one location, because, you know, the dogs in the distance were barking, you know, and that was the second recording that I got. But, you know, two nights prior to that one, that first recording, I mean, all the dogs were silent, you know, and you could hear the howling, and, you know, probably, you know, again, you know, when you make a recording, you can't tell by listening to the audio, oh, it's coming, you know, from this way or that way. But me being there, you know, it looked like there were some responses, but I mean, there wasn't a single dog bark anywhere, you know, so it made me think that they were kind of spread out and everybody was just, you know, on standby. All the dogs are like, you know, trying to figure out what's going on.
Playing it low key.
Yeah, I don't doubt it. I don't doubt it. But,
yes.
But,
so this,
yeah, and this,
continuing action then, right?
Yeah, yeah. One time was at 4:30 in the morning, and like I said, the second recording was kind of unusual. I mean, it wasn't an overcast day or anything, but, you know, I did notice that the howling started, you know, pretty much between 8 and 9 o'clock at night, which I don't know why that was. Normally they, you know, they howl a lot later than that, but why that time? It's a mystery, but I'm definitely not a, master of this type of creature research. I'm just learning like everybody else out there.
Oh, no, I understand. Yeah, well, it's pretty neat. Well, gosh, are you going to stick around for the end of the show?
I plan on it.
Thanks, bud. Our next guest here has got some pretty neat stuff going on. I think you have some questions.
All right, put them on.
I want to thank you for coming on, Anthony.
Thanks for having me.
Thank you. And we'll see you here in a little bit at the end of the show here. Ladies and gentlemen, this is Anthony from Virginia. And next we're going to go to Rocky and Swede from Arkansas. Rocky and Swede, how are you tonight?
Doing fine, Marco. How about yourself?
Pretty good.
Show sounded really good tonight.
Hey, Swede.
I'm sorry, Thunder Bummit, what did you say?
I said, howdy.
Oh, howdy. Yeah, I'm sorry I missed you. Hey, I was gonna tell you. I didn't get a chance to tell you, so I guess I'm gonna tell the listeners and the world and you all at the same time, save a repeat about a little incident that happened on Monday night. I'll just ask you, Rocky, what do you think of whenever you immediately when comes to mind when you smell a rotten sweet potatoes and rotten meat. What comes to mind?
Sweet potatoes and rotten meat. I think of a damn goody wrestler.
I do too. I thought of the Cuties immediately because I know it's kind of weird. I was going to tell you about it. I talked to Marco about it, and I was going to get on the show here, and I'm gonna go ahead with it, Marco, if you're ready for
it. You go right ahead. You tell us where everything that took place.
It was about 2:20 in the morning. It's been cool here down at night, you know, so had the bedroom window open, letting a little cool summer, country air come in. Not so hot summer. We've got some cool fall stuff coming on that's been down in the 40s. So it's been real pleasant sleeping. But 2:20 in the morning, I smelled the smell, the major smell, hose down. Well, I thought the dogs or something were right outside the window there or something of the effect. I got up and went to the window with the little flashlight and the handgun off the nightstand and kind of looked out there and didn't see anything. The dogs weren't underneath there, and then I immediately noticed there was not a sound. There was not a cricket. There was not a bug. There was not the dogs barking like they generally do, chasing the deer around. Nothing. Complete silence and the smell. And I instantly kind of snapped out of it, and I got up. I mean, went on into the front, opened the front door, and when I opened the front door to look out, there were all four dogs on the front porch, which is just bizarre. They're never on the front porch. The dogs on the front porch.
I can imagine Booger not raising hell about
it. I know it. You know Booger's going to grab anything. She always does. She's the varmint master. And, you know, she was on the front porch looking at me. Give me that look. Ears pinned down, just looking. So I went upstairs. I went upstairs and got that big light. I slid the sliding glass window open, and I started easing out on the roof out there, and I got down to the end there where I get past that tree where I could see to the south, and I flipped that light on. When I looked, I could still smell that smell a little bit, and I kind of fanned across there. We're talking about, you know, a pretty good area there, you know, several acres and a good distance to the wood lines. I got around to where we stack our round bales, and I saw a big, dark black. You're talking about like the blackest black. This is black as black figure, and it had just about to get behind the round bales, about two good strides, and we put up the 1,500-pound bales, and it had got behind the bales, kind of about a catty corner there to the edge of the woods, and was still a couple of feet above the hay bales, and just went by about two or three of them and disappeared into the woods. And I immediately freaked out. I mean, me and Rocky have went and we've done the hunt thing on alert and all this, and now this is in my backyard. Of course, granted, we live at the end of the road, but, you know, and there's a lot of off the edge of the earth here, kind of speak, but still right here on top of it. And then on Tuesday, I didn't say anything to the wife about it or nothing. I just was just kind of freaked out about it and went back to bed and laid there with my eyes open for quite some time. And probably 10 or 15 minutes after I got laid back down, the bugs went to chirping again and the crickets started again and all of that. So it was a really weird encounter so close to home. I mean, we went out on expeditions, and I sleep light in the tent, and Thunder Vomit does too, and the whole nine yards we do that, but to have it right there at your back, beside your house, it was really a thing. And then Tuesday, my wife said that she would fix turnip greens. I got a big patch of turnip greens in the garden for turnips growing for the fall crop. So I went out there to cut some greens, and on the south side of the garden there, right along the edge where the weeds are, where I couldn't see any footprints. I was looking for deer prints because I saw 12 or so turnips pulled out of the ground and gone. So, you know, I don't know if maybe this creature might have decided he needed some turnips and pulled them. There's nobody else around to pull them. The deer don't pull them and eat them until the middle of winter after they've ate all the greens off of them in, you know, January. they'll dig them up occasionally and eat some after they get real sweet. But these were just plucked out real nice, no greens laying around, no nothing, no sign of nothing, and gone. So it was a pretty, you know, I thought the dogs might have been some of the stinking stuff, and I did check the dogs, and none of the dogs are smelling like what I smelled. So I think that I had a little close to home encounter, and it was very invigorating in the middle of the night. And I was going to see what Rocky the Thunder Vomit was going to be doing if you were working tomorrow.
It doesn't matter. I'll be over there. Give me about a half an hour after we get done here, and I'll be over.
All right. Maybe we'll do a little. You can take the high side. I'll take the low side, and bring your 35 Whalen with you.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, it's a pretty good sized critter above them hay bales. I'm talking, you know. If it's a black bear, I've never seen a black bear walk that far on its back legs. And I just got a couple of strides vision of it before it got behind the bales. But, you know, it was really, it really got my attention in the smell and the whole thing. And I immediately recognized the smell from when we were at camp when the cuties got stolen. Our cooler got ripped down out of the tree. So, if you want to come over, Rock, when I get off the webcast, I'm putting on my boots and going out. I'm going to go out and set for a little while.
It's amazing. You know that.
Question for you.
Excuse me.
I got a question for you. Why the hell didn't you call me before now?
I've been trying to call you, but I guess I was leaving messages in the storage building.
Okay.
I didn't get a chance to call you yesterday. I didn't get a chance to talk to you yesterday, and then I've been trying to get a hold of you today. But I had talked to Tom earlier today, but I didn't tell Tom anything about my encounter because he wasn't feeling well, and I just wished him a happy birthday and told him to get better, and we'd keep him in our prayers and all that. And I called Marco and told him what I had happened and what I had experienced and hoped he didn't think I was crazy, because usually we're out in the woods doing this, and it's kind of weird it happening right here at the house. and my dog.
Well, we got a guy that's on here right now that's had the same kind of an experience near his house. And we're going to have mine for about 5 minutes.
The dog thing was just amazing to me, because my dogs usually just get on everything, and they're not too particular about what they do get on to, but they were just on the front porch.
Well, the dog thing is really intriguing, because this is probably, I don't know, maybe the sixth or seventh time that we've had experiences where people have had encounters where they've been using dogs, and the dogs were acting way out of the ordinary, what their ordinary, habits are, how to act and all that, right? And some of them, this one guy's got two pit bulls that are trained, I mean really trained to kill, and they ran underneath the house with their tail between their legs and wouldn't come out.
Wow.
So
it's just pretty good. Like Rocky's talking about my little dog Booger. She's a little old feist dog, and she jumps on everything from the UPS man to whatever's running around, you know, whatever she can get onto, if it's a stray dog or coons, possums, whatever.
The only time I heard, we had an incident that took place in South Carolina in it's a camping area. And a kid had a little chihuahua. And that little chihuahua attacked one of these creatures, and that creature whapped it and sent it about 30 feet rolling on the ground.
Wow.
But the chihuahuas, they're fearless little stupid things anyway, you know, most of the time. And he had the dog was all, beat up, and he was carrying it. He just got in his car and his truck and took off and left all his stuff there and left, and then he came back the next day. But
the Swede's dog Booger has probably bit me 15 times in the last year and a half. So, it's not like she doesn't She's not afraid to bite any damn thing, but...
Yeah.
Rocky, I wanted to tell you about it, but, you know, I hate to spill the beans on to you on the show, but it just had to happen that way.
Oh,
today
well,
was a weird day.
Well,
your
I'll tell you what.
From my house as it would have been any other way.
That's
I tell you what, let's bring this other guy, Chuck Creel. Chuck is an old-time buddy of ours here, been with us for years. He's been on their expeditions and everything. Chuck, how are you tonight, buddy?
Marco, doing good. How's everybody doing? I would say hey to everybody, but I know you're running short of time. I want to wish everybody the best of everything.
Well, what I want to do is ask you. You heard what Sweet just said, right? About his encounter near his home. Tell us about
it.
Tell them about your encounter near your home, bud.
Well, not an encounter, a sighting.
Yeah, it's a visual encounter.
Yeah, well, it was a night under a full moon, and you could see him walking along my cow barn. I was like, holy cow, that's when I went in the house and got my .30-06. You know, I was going to start shooting them, and Chief Dan told me, no, don't, just watch them. You know, so, and to this day, I'm glad I didn't, but, you know, after listening to the show and all that, and listening to all the fine people you got on there, I don't understand how people that are sane, you know, can tell their stories and things like that, and science doesn't listen to them, because everybody you got on your show sounds to me like they're good old country boys that are sane, you know, and nobody wants to do nothing about it. You know?
Well, I mean, that's just the nature of the nature of the beast, Chuck.
Yeah, and
I tell you what. Well, you've had a couple things that have happened here recently. Why don't you tell us about that?
We got a guy down. We're fixing to go down the end of this month, the last weekend of this month. He's got lambs and cattle and donkeys and chickens that are just being ripped apart on his property, you know. And normally you would say, well, you know, mountain lions, of course, Alabama doesn't recognize mountain lions as being indigenous to this area, or bears, you know. So I guess it's a fox doing it, you know. But what we're going to do, but he'll go out on his back porch, and he's got it recorded, and I'm supposed to be getting that recording, too. And he hears the god awful screams and wail, and just like, and he said the same thing that they said on the show there a minute ago, that, you know, everything's quiet, you know, and then you hear this god awful wails and stuff. So what we're going to do, we're going to go down and check Choctahatchee River, and we're going to go down on the backside of his property, and we're going to come in from the riverside. And we're setting up camp and doing an investigation right there. So,
by golly.
You know, it's, you know, and I don't know, everybody you got on your show, I don't know if they go in the woods unarmed.
No.
Some do, but most of them don't. I mean, Chuck, you got to understand, a lot of the people that have these encounters are not hunting or looking for one. I mean, it just kind of happens.
Yeah, but I'm talking about if you're looking for one.
Oh, yeah, no, they're looking for one, they're armed.
Okay,
hold on.
Good.
I'm going to put everybody on. I'm going to put everybody on, Chuck. We're going to have our get-together right now. We'll get everybody on the air. Okay, I got Bruce the Snake Man on. I got Anthony on. Roger Peterson, I got him. Chuck Creel's here.
Yep, I'm
Rocky's
here.
Rocky's here. Swede's here. Steve, are you there? Steve? He's there. He just didn't unmute himself yet.
Hey, just the records. When I go in the woods or on a call or anything, I'm unarmed.
That's a snake man.
When I go out, I am armed.
That's what I want to do. I want to go prove a big hairy man that can rip me to shreds exists and not have no way to defend myself.
Well, I'll just stay at home.
You know, you're an idiot. That's like you watch these people. I mean, really, that... You know, woe is me, you know, these things I got on, like, Discovery and all that, you know, vicious attacks and things like that, and they're out there walking around the wilderness, and they got mauled by a grizzly bear, and they didn't have no guns or nothing. I don't feel sorry for them.
No, not at all. Everywhere I go, I'm armed, Chuck.
You know,
I've had encounters with animals out there that could chew you apart, and I haven't been mauled yet.
Yeah, well, you know,
I'll tell you what. Even if I ain't got a rifle, I've got a cane that's got a blade on it about 16 inches long, so I'm never unarmed.
I want to see our ancestors going through some of this wilderness unarmed. Yep,
that's right. They all had clubs.
Yeah.
Hey, Chuck.
Yes, sir.
Just remind me, and I'll stay home, and I won't come out and frighten you to death.
You got that. All right, buddy.
Hey, you know something, Chuck? With
no,
old Dave, with Dave, when he said that he saw that creature standing by the side of the road, and then it went down and ran on all fours, they do that. They call it knuckle running.
They did it behind my house right here.
Yes, sir, I know. I remember you talking to me about it.
Man, she's dead. And I mean, after he told me not to shoot it, after I done got my 30-06 and I was ready to shoot, there was three of them.
Yeah, well, like I said, you know, with me, unfortunately, I did shoot, but I had four other people that was counting on me, my brother.
Well, what I don't, you know, and I got proof of this, too. I got eyewitnesses, and plus my son's truck was parked out there, you know, with the bed facing down towards the swamp area. And you could actually see this thing under the moonlight. And like you said, he didn't walk up there. He got down on all fours, and then he come halfway, and then he stood up and walked a little
way. Sir.
And he got back down on all fours.
And, you know, the funny thing, too, with the dogs, we've got a dog that is a assisted living dog. It's a pit bull.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, she's trained to protect us.
Yeah.
And when me and my wife had an encounter out here, that dog, she barked once and just stared right there, and she was right between me and Kelly, and she would not move.
Oh, yeah.
But she wasn't afraid, you know, but she was standing there holding her ground.
Well, I know people's going to say, well, Chuck, you're crazy. You're stupid. I've been woke up in the middle of the night by something beating on the side of my dang house.
Yes, sir.
I have literally walked out with my dad's Model 94 30-30 Winchester going, who's trying to break in my house, and seen nothing.
Uh-huh.
But I have smelled it.
Yep.
You know?
Well, I'll tell you what, our trailer park is on the outskirts of town, and we have some weird happenings out here, too.
Oh, yeah.
You know? Oh, yes. I've had the neighbors calling me in the middle of the night telling me there's somebody beating on the side of their trailer.
Well, what I don't understand, you know, I have actually had my trash can opened up.
Yep, turned over.
Okay, and I have got a picnic table out there.
Uh-huh.
Now, if I'm a wild animal, and I'm going to go through somebody's trash, number one, this is one of those big trash cans that stand about 4.5 feet off the ground.
Yes, sir.
That the county comes around and picks it up.
Uh-huh.
Okay, all right. Number one, what can get in there? Number two is, why are they taking Coke cans and beer bottles and setting them on the table, lining them up?
Yeah.
You know, and going through there like they're being, you know, picky about it.
Well, that's because they was out watching y'all while you were out there and you didn't realize it.
And
they do do that.
You know, animals that I know don't do that. I've known my whole life. I'm like, what the heck is this, you know?
So
just crazy stuff that goes on, you know what I mean?
Yeah, well, you know, one thing that I remembered from my encounter,
mm-hmm.
we had been drinking soda that night, and we had a six-pack of beer with us,
uh-huh.
and we had chips and dip and pretzels.
Right.
Now, this darn thing come down behind us when the mail was there, and they took the pretzels and the liver that we had for bait, and by God, I know they were doing like we were doing. But they took the pretzels and the chicken liver bait.
Well, who are we to say what they're doing, but you can watch them and see what they're doing and maybe learn, you know, their tactics and what they're doing and things like that. But as far as I'm concerned, I don't know. I can't figure them out.
I know for a fact, okay, out here in Arizona, they follow the cow paths so that it kind of hides where they're at, you know, because the cattle go right to water, and these creatures know it. So they follow the cow paths, you know. I've seen them, okay? I've just seen them literally eating scallions, which are wild onions, and they eat the clams, and I've seen them eating catfish. Mm-hmm. Yes, sir.
Well,
and they eat corn.
Hello?
Yeah, and they eat corn also.
Yes, sir.
Yeah, I know. I mean, but I do have a question for you, Raj, while I got you on here, buddy.
You betcha.
You know, I've talked to Leonard, Dan, JC, and all them, and I'm asking this out of stupidity because I don't know that terrain out there. I need to understand that, okay?
Yeah.
I want to ask this to be learning something.
Okay.
You know, I grew up in West Virginia.
Right.
You know, where, I mean, my goodness, you got to pump in sunlight in some of them hollers, you know?
Oh, yes, sir.
That's the way it is.
That's
here
supposed
with
to be
us
funny.
Too.
But then I moved to down here in the south, and now I'm in all these swamps, and now I'm dealing with these creatures down there. I look at the terrain that you live in. Where do these things hide at out there?
Okay, I'll tell you.
I'm asking to learn.
Okay, most of the time out here in the Arizona area, they find caves.
Okay.
And they spend the daytime in the caves. Mm-hmm. And then other places where, we've got all different kinds of terrain out here. We've got forests, we've got deserts, we've got swamp areas. But most of the time,
Been there. I've never been out there, you know.
Right.
But everything I've ever looked at is just rocks and desert and stuff.
Oh, yes. And they also, they build their own little
ledges. Roger and Chuck, let me tell you something.
Yes.
I have some pictures.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Of Arizona.
Uh-huh. Yes.
And these creatures, I've got a baby on top of a mama's shoulders.
Yes,
sir. Sitting behind a brush. That are, you know, these scrub brush that they got out there.
Oh, yes, sir. On the video that I did and sent to Tom, that's what this creature was doing. He was right behind the bush.
Yeah.
Yep. And the fur, their fur,
matches.
There is not black or brown, dark brown. It is almost the color of the rocks or the
sand. Yes, sir. It sure is.
Kind of like a guy code lizard.
They blend,
you know, they blend in
the terrain they're in. They blend in, Marco. Oh. They blend in. I've got a picture that I took out here in Skeleton Canyon, and I'll be darned if the darn thing didn't look like a Joshua tree.
Hey, Roger, can I ask you a question? I mean, can I tell you a quick question, and then I need to ask you something real fast.
Oh, go right ahead.
All right, we had a guy down here, Marco remembers it. He worked on the road crew. Okay, he was out. I went there, and I met the Coffee County Sheriff's Department down there. On the road crew, and he was running one of those tracks. This is in the middle of nowhere now, and bear in mind, it's the dirt road that leads to the landfill.
Right.
Okay. Well, he had one of those big old, you seen those big old arms with the bush hogs with a big old arm on it?
They yes, sir.
Sure
have.
The roads.
Uh-huh.
Okay, he was running that and looked over to his right and seen a big hairy man standing there looking at him.
Oh, yes, absolutely.
In the middle of nowhere now.
Yes,
this
sir.
This guy, this is not someone I want to take Bigfoot hunting with me, okay?
Yeah.
He left the tractor running, jumped off of it, and jumped in the six-pack and locked all the doors and locked the rest of the road crew out who was beating on the doors to let him in.
Holy Moses! They will stand there. They will stand there and watch you.
Hey.
They are that curious.
But I'm not going Bigfoot hunting with that guy.
No. Not unless I have the keys to the truck.
Bob come down there, Marco. Remember?
Yeah. Let's open it up for Sweet and Rocky. Sweet and Rocky, you got any questions to Chuck or Roger or Anthony?
Well, we're just talking about that about the standing and watching thing. You know, the only other visual encounter I had when I was telling you about when I at our camp there, that creature stood there in the shadow. It was at least 15 minutes, and it never moved. It didn't do no walking. It didn't do nothing. It was 15 minutes, and I mean, you know, you can see a deer, and you say, well, that deer was there for 15 minutes, and if in all actuality, it was a 30-second view.
Exactly, but yeah, these creatures will stand there and watch
me in the dark and him in the dark, and he never moved, and I never moved.
Yes, sir.
Until he got ready to go.
Yep.
Well, I like that. These creatures was walking. You know, my barn was 10, you know?
I mean, with my encounter, it took from 2:30 in the morning until about 4:30, and that's when I finally had to shoot, and shortly after that was when the sun come up. But, yeah, they stick around, and they will not move. They'll hold their ground.
You know, I've heard a lot of guys talk about...
Well, me and Chief Dan went down there behind my son's truck the next morning, and there was big old huge dugout tracks or something
that
dug in.
Uh-huh.
You know?
Hey Creed.
Just make this quick, and I'll let you all do it. But after that thing happened with the Coffee County Sheriff's Department, they got pictures of it. It's on file at the Coffee County
Sheriff's
Department. We casted tracks of it, and it wasn't a five-toed print. It was a four-toed.
A three-toed.
And it had that, what do they call that, where your thumb...
Yeah, the extending appendage.
Yeah, it was like a gorilla track.
Yeah.
And another thing I don't understand about it, I followed it about 30 foot in the woods down this ravine, and it just quit.
Yep. Well, I'll tell you what, I've even got tracks out where I go. I've gotten tracks that are three-toed, Chuck.
Mm-hmm.
Three-toed. It must be from inbreeding or something. I don't know.
Well, they probably migrated from West Virginia or something out there.
Nah.
Maybe it's one of Roger's folks.
Hey, Anthony, do you have a question? Anthony, do you have a question? Anybody here, buddy?
Well, that one that plowed around into its chest, I forgot his name. I'm just kind of curious, man. I mean, how did them eyes
look
like?
That's Roger Peterson. It was in Arizona, yeah.
Yeah.
Yep.
I mean, tell me more about the eyes.
The eyes on that thing were just like a real bright red. You know, and it made it look like something from hell. You know what I'm saying? But it's hard to describe. You know, I came apart about 2 weeks later, and I even drew a picture of this creature that I saw. But a lot of your creatures, especially nocturnal, like deer and cats, their eyes show up like green and yellow, things like that. But this creature, his eyes were bright, bright red.
Yeah, I've seen the bright red eyes before, and I've seen them kind of orange as well.
Yeah,
yes, sir.
And just recently I passed by, a friend of Tom, Marco Bill's, Jim Dawson out there in Arkansas, and spent one night there, and sure enough, man, I mean, while I was there, we seen them eyes in his place too, you know?
Oh, yes, sir. I believe you. And I've had people tell me that even when they get even closer to you, that their eyes turn kind of like a bluish color when they're right dead on you.
Hey, Roger.
You know?
The one that me and the one we seen up at Root Creek Park, it had green eyes.
Yep. I believe you. I believe you.
Really, I mean, why in the world did they change colors? You think they're, like, adapted to, you know, seeing during the night? You think it's like they got...
I believe that is exactly what it is, that their eyes are adjusting to whatever light source is around, you know?
No.
And when you hit them with a flashlight, bam, their eyes are bright red, you know?
No, I have a theory
about
that.
Even without a flashlight, they're red, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, but I really have no answer on that one. But
hey,
I have heard people say that. Yes, sir.
I have a theory on that part about the eyes turning different colors.
Uh-huh.
Ever heard of those mood rings?
Yeah.
Yeah.
As I get it,
I used to have one, and yeah, they did change colors with the heat of your finger.
Well, you know,
yeah, how do you tell when the bug is in a good mood?
You know, in the back of the red one, the eyes, the pupils open
well,
very
what
wide.
What I've been led to understand is the change of the red denotes some sort of an infrared range of vision, like a night vision. And these creatures, we believe, if you think about it, most of these cameras, these trail cams, are all tripped by sensors, infrared sensors.
Right. Right.
Yeah, and low
infrared sensors, yeah.
Right. And these creatures, absolutely, we know that without a doubt,
they can see that light.
Detect can see yes, these damn.
They can see
you know,
that laser.
Detectors,
yes.
Yeah.
Oh yes.
Right.
They can see it.
So, what it's led us to believe is that they do have a low range of infrared capability of some sort to be able to visual.
Yes,
and,
sir.
And that's
yeah,
what.
They dance around my
if
game
you look
cameras,
at it,
sure.
It says their eyes glow, and there's a difference between shine.
And glow. Yes, sir.
Okay.
That's what I was trying to say. They were like a glowing red, you know. And yes, sir. I kind of agree with that because I even did experiments with different animals out here, and I'd use a laser pen, and I'd shut that thing up, and not a one. Coyote, mountain lion. Bear, nothing. They would not cross it because they could see it, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And with the trip cameras, I do believe that these creatures can see that sensor, and that's why they avoid them, you know. And a lot of times whenever they've gotten pictures, it's usually been at the back of the creature or a shoulder shot or something like that.
Right.
Well, you know, several times now, we've had the young kids here a couple weeks ago is the most recent, where he set the trail cam up and he set some stuff on a stump. And the stuff that he sent on the stump, he set a jar of peanut butter with a cover on it, and he set some fruit that he put inside of a jar, all mashed up, and had the cover on it. And as long as the camera was out there, nothing touched it. Nothing
right.
Could unscrew the thing.
Yeah, I remember
well,
that
I took
kid.
The camera down and came back the next day,
and that was
the
good.
Peanut
it was
butter
open.
Was gone, and the fruit jar was gone. And the fruit jar,
yep.
He found the fruit jar, and the fruit was all gone out of it. And he found the peanut butter jar, but the cover was gone, so he couldn't
yeah.
find the cover.
Oh, yeah, I believe it. Yeah.
Well,
so,
Marco, can I tell you this here real quick? And I'm probably wrong.
Sure, buddy.
You know, ask my wife, I'm wrong about everything.
Welcome to the club.
I mean, it's like my daddy told me years and years ago, and I'll just explain this to you.
Daddy.
Let's say there was a deer standing in your living room.
Oh.
You going to know that deer's there?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Won't be after I eat him.
If we go in the woods, we're going in that Sasquatch's living room.
That's
yeah,
right.
Yeah.
And they're going to know
yeah.
it's there. I don't care what you do. I don't care if you take a dump or a pee. Or put up cameras or whatever, they're going to know something ain't right.
That's right.
Yeah. Yeah.
I
yeah,
mean, that's
I go
my
with
own
that.
Personal opinion.
Oh,
hey,
yeah,
sweet.
Absolutely.
I
yeah.
got a,
hey, guys, I got to run. My phone's dying. But God bless y'all, and it was good to talk to you again, all of you.
God bless
hey,
you.
Okay,
God.
RP. Right, take care, buddy.
Bless
we'll
you
talk to you later, my friend. Bye-bye.
I'd like to ask a question about the moon phase thing to everybody. You know, I was talking
uh-oh.
About that in the past, and me and Rocky has had out on our expeditions and stuff that we have had less nighttime activity of any sign whatsoever on the full moon on into where it starts.
Wow!
Still starts
fading away,
and then as it starts waning off after the full moon, about 2 or 3 days after the full moon, we'll see broad daylight, midday activity, and
wow.
then as the moon wanes off, it goes back to nighttime.
Same here,
anybody
buddy.
Anybody else experience that?
Yes, sir.
I have experienced that more than once.
I heard don't go on a full moon because you ain't going to see nothing.
Well, no, we never do. I mean, we've walked for miles and stayed out all night long with no infrared. We never burn a campfire.
And I've went like 3, 4, 5, 7 days after that and had all kind of activity.
Yeah.
You guys need to be where I'm at.
I mean, during the full moon, we had activity during the middle of the day at noon. We would see tracking. We would see stuff, pawpaws picked and stuff like that during midday. But then after
I don't know, Rocky, I hear you guys been having a lot of activity up there.
Excuse me?
Yeah, we have.
This is the giant here. I hear you guys been having a lot of activity up there.
Hey, Mr. Giant, I'm sorry.
We have. We've got
this right here at the house, which is quite a pretty good distance from where we generally go at here at my cabin. And it's kind of weird. It's a little unnerving, but... when we go out on our expeditions, we have noticed that. I mean, it's with the deer, it's with everything. There's nothing stirring during the full moon. We don't see a coon. We don't see nothing.
Wow.
On a full moon. I just was wondering if everybody else had, if anyone else had experienced that same situation.
Not really the same situation, but Marco, I told you about last Wednesday about the 3 boatloads this summer here. Three boatloads of people witnessed the same thing, a creature in the water over by Pat May and Pat May's Lake.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, they just shut down the park. I think it's due to the Obama thing, but the game wardens are all being very tight-lipped about something. There's something big going on over in Pat May's.
Wow.
Mm. Wow.
Whoops. I'm going to go to Swede's house. It's nice talking to you.
Okay. Well, it's coming to the end anyway. We're way over time, because we're having such a good time, I want to thank everybody for coming on the show tonight and sharing. We'll see everybody next week. Keep Bigfooting and keep on looking for that guy. We're going to get him one of these days.
God bless all y'all and keep it up.
Thank you, Marco.
Well, folks, once again, it's time to say so long. We'd like to thank Mr. Tom Biscardi and his guests and the Bigfoot team for joining us, and we'd especially like to thank you, our listeners, for tuning in. This is Marco Bill saying see you next Wednesday evening for some more Bigfoot Live radio show entertainment with Mr. Tom Biscardi and his team. And until then, keep the Bigfoot live and keep Bigfooting. See you next week.
Three men with a gold and a pack that they'd hold and a promise till the day that they die. Answers to the questions no one's found before. Driving determination, the only key they had to unlock the door. Monsters, mysteries, legend, tales, and facts.